Good morning and welcome to another edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme that we hope will provide you with a look at our world, both in and around the city of Brighton and Hove, and now even further afield, thanks to our new and more powerful transmitter. All for both our older listeners and those not so old, plus, of course, some music to help things along. In this programme, we'll be hearing from Paul Bromley just how the Bluebell Railway have been affected by the pandemic and when they plan to restart their services. There'll also be some news on a possible shortage of, heaven forbid, chocolate from Catherine Higgs of the Co-op. Mayor Davis will be chatting to Dr. Zoe Randall about the big butterfly count, and I'll be talking to Age UK CEO Helen Rice about their campaign to stop the BBC from abandoning free television licences for those of us over 75. And finally, Bernadette Mossman will be joining us to talk about the safety of our loved ones who are in or about to go into care homes. That's all to come in this edition of At Home This Morning. Our magazine programme is made for Brighton's only truly local radio station, Radio Reverb, by Grey Matters Productions, and is broadcast on 97.2 FM, DAB Digital Radio, on your smart speaker, or online by just putting Radio Reverb into Google and selecting Listen Live. But first, let's remember the passing of Dame Vera Lynn, with the unmistakable sounds of the two Spitfires that flew over her funeral procession as it paused at the crossroads in her home village of Ditchling. Just a few seconds there of the recent tribute to Dame Vera Lynn by the two Spitfires from the Battle of Britain Memorial Flight and the villagers of her home village of Ditchling. The last time we heard from Paul Bromley at the Bluebell Railway, they were just entering lockdown. So that seems months ago. And of course it is, literally. Well, thanks to Zoom, Paul is joining us on the programme again, and I think there's a light at the end of the tunnel, shall we say.
Indeed, Chris. Hello again. Yeah, things were very, very different when we last spoke, having just entered into the closure period and the whole future of the railway was very uncertain. We had no idea how long things were going to last. And now, as you say, things are looking up and we are now planning on reopening the railway, resuming our services on Friday the 7th of August. So that will be almost 5 months since we last ran the steam train along the line.
Gosh, so presumably it's not just a question of putting a fire in an engine and coupling it up to a few coaches.
There's a lot of preparation that we're currently undertaking. Staff and some volunteers have now come back to the railway to begin a very intensive period of preparation to get everything ready for reopening. In terms of the locomotives, that means carrying out all the necessary inspections and tests to make sure that they are still fit and operational. And in terms of the staff and volunteers, it's refamiliarising themselves with all the procedures that we have to follow running a public train service. Obviously, in 5 months, people can get a little rusty about what they need to do. So in preparation for reopening, we will be running a few little trains up and down the line. They're not for the public, it's not for the passengers, it's purely for the staff, for the loco crews, for the guards and for the station staff and signallers to make sure that they're well up to speed so that when we do reopen to the public, people will not notice that there's been any interruption at all in the wonderful service that we offer and the wonderful day out that we provide people.
You mentioned the 7th of August. Now, that's a significant date in itself, isn't it?
It is. It happens to be a coincidence that that's when we think we will have carried out all the necessary preparations in order to reopen. But it also marks 60 years to the day since the Bluebell Railway opened as a heritage line. The first public trains ran on the line from Sheffield Park on the 7th of August 1960, and the Bluebell was the pioneer line. It was the first standard gauge preserved passenger railway in the UK, and therefore on the 7th of August we are celebrating our 60th birthday.
And will there be celebrations and detonators on the line and cakes and all that sort of thing?
Not quite all that. Obviously, we did have a very, very big weekend of celebrations planned, had it been normal times. We've decided to postpone the major celebrations until next year, August 2021. But we will still be celebrating on that day. We will have bunting out and we will have a few special events to mark the reopening. And we will be running our first train for the members only. We wanted to say thank you to all the members who have stood by the railway during this period and for their work over the last 60 years. So the first train we will run when we resume services will be entirely for members. And then we will have the public trains where members of the public can come back on that day. We'll be running three trains a day on that Friday, and that will be our timetable service from now onwards at weekends only, and we'll also be running some dining trains as well.
Systems are go, but not as they quite were previously. As you've already said, it's only weekends at the moment. Have you any idea when the normal service will resume?
We're calling it a phased reopening. We calculated that it would be very difficult to go from a standing start back up to the normal level of service that we would have expected. And of course, during this summer period, we would have been operating daily train service. This is our busiest period over the summer, but we didn't think that was practical. And also we didn't know what the level of demand would be for people coming back. So we've decided that we will start at weekends only. And if there is the public demand there, we will increase our services. We will operate trains on more days if people do want to come back. And as well as that, we've obviously had to put in a whole series of measures to ensure that we comply with all the necessary regulations on social distancing and health protection measures. And we've set out very clearly on our website exactly what we have done to ensure there is hand sanitizer around the stations, that people will be kept apart, that we have an enhanced cleaning regime of our carriages with particular attention to the sort of areas that people are likely to touch, such as door handles, and a whole series of other steps to ensure that we have now received the kite mark, that's the green tick that says we're good to go from Visit England, because we've complied with all the necessary regulations and people will know that they can still have a safe and enjoyable day out at the Bluebell Railway.
But they can't just turn up and buy a ticket as they used to.
No, that is one of the measures that we have put in place, that all the tickets will be pre-booked. People will have to go online and book their service. And we're asking people to arrive shortly before their train is due. We have one-way systems in place around all the stations to ensure the flow of visitors continues. What we did want to do, though, was to make sure that even though we have sanitised the stations, we haven't sanitised the experience. People will still have an enjoyable day out with us. We don't want to make it look like a crime scene with tape everywhere. We still want people to have that genuine heritage experience of travelling on a steam train through the wonderful Sussex countryside. And we are determined that that will still be the case. And I'm sure all our visitors will understand and appreciate that we have had to make some changes to ensure that we comply with all the regulations. And I'm sure they would welcome that as well.
Will people be required to wear masks as they are on the big railway?
We are asking people to bring a face covering. Now, that's different to a full surgical face mask, so that as they arrive at the stations and when they're in queues, that they will be wearing a face covering. And although the science does vary on that, we have followed all the government guidelines and all the health protection measures that are in place. But obviously, when they are having on a dining train, they will be able to take off their face coverings when they're sitting in their compartments or sitting at their seats in order to have their have their food. We won't enforce those regulations. But certainly on arrival and departure in the sort of public areas, we will ask people to be wearing a face covering.
But there'll be steam engines at the head of each train as normal?
Yes, we're still running a heritage steam experience, and we have decided that because we are sort of reopening, that we should rebrand our services. So all the timetable trains will now be carrying the headboard, that's the words that go on the front of the train, as the Pioneer. So they'll be known as the Pioneer service, and that is a nod to our very early roots 60 years ago when we were the Pioneer line, leading the way in terms of preservation standards and having a group of enthusiasts club together to take over a disused railway line or a closed section of track. So they'll all be called the Pioneer. And then we thought we would rebrand all our dining trains as well and give them a slight nod to some of the classic train services. So the breakfast train, the continental breakfast service, we're going to call the Breakfast Bell. Summer ploughman's lunch train, the Rocket. Again, a nod to the history of the railways. The afternoon tea train will be known as the Cream Tea Riviera, and the evening train will be known as the Blue Bell. So we thought it would be a nice, fun way to show people that we haven't lost our sense of humour, we haven't lost our sense of fun, and that it will still be a memorable day out for them, even with the necessary steps that we've had to take to ensure that we're COVID secure.
Now, of course, with an enforced ceasing of operations, the financial situation must be quite dire. Have you managed to survive?
We have managed to survive, and that's entirely thanks to the generosity and support of our members, our volunteers, our friends and supporters and members of the public in Brighton and across the wider region. People may not know that the Bluebell Railway, like many other heritage railways, is a not-for-profit organisation. So all the money that we get in each year, and most of the money that we do get in comes in from fares, from members of the public, that money goes into the restoration of our locomotives, renewing the track, carrying out repairs to the historic fleet of carriages and wagons. So obviously the closure had a devastating impact on our finances because we weren't getting any money in at all. So we launched an emergency appeal, asking people if they would be prepared to donate. Gradually over time, the money that people donated, particularly from those who had visited the railway in the past and had come for either special occasions or because they were train enthusiasts, that is now standing at close to £400,000.
People thinking of coming and wanting to come, what should they do? How do they get in touch?
All tickets will have to be pre-booked, so they should go to our website, that's bluebell-railway.com, and we list there all the services and how people can buy tickets, whether that's for the service train to the Pioneer or any of the dining services that we've mentioned. There's also details there of the extra steps that we've taken to ensure health protection and social distancing. Plus, they can follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, where we provide constant updates about the services and the tickets that are available.
We're hearing from Paul Bromley at the Bluebell Railway. From this month, many thousands of older people will have to find nearly £160 to pay for their licence fee for watching television, something that's been free for those over 75 for more than a decade. Age UK have been running a campaign to stop this charge being imposed on older people. And joining us now is Helen Rice, Chief Executive of Age UK, West Sussex, Brighton and Hove. Good morning, Helen.
Morning, Chris. Thanks so much for having me.
That's a pleasure. Tell me, Helen, what's this campaign all about? Can we actually make a difference?
Well, I think we managed in the past to sort of stop it coming into force. I mean, this raised its head over a year ago. You know, we thought we'd kicked it into the long grass, if you like, but it's now coming in, and we're just going to keep fighting about it. I cannot understand how at a time like this, they think now is an appropriate time to do this. I mean, there's never an appropriate time to do this, but if you really wanted to choose a really, 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 really bad time, you'd choose now, wouldn't you? I mean, it's just shocking. We're so bitterly disappointed. I have to say I'm mostly disappointed with the government because they used to subsidise, you know, the BBC, which allowed them to do this for free, and they've made that decision not to. So I don't understand when you're willing to do things like with stamp duty, give people, you know, a stamp duty holiday. They're willing to do lots of things for those who are unemployed right now, which is absolutely right. But those that have been most at risk and suffered the most at this time have been the over 75s who've been, you know, and we're going to do this to them now, Chris. I just cannot understand it.
I mean, one of the problems for the BBC, and we're not here to stand up for them or pillory them particularly, but they have been accused of being profligate with huge salaries and paying so-called personalities absolutely astronomical and ridiculous fees. So haven't they got to put their own house in order?
Yeah, I think everywhere we've got things all over the show, haven't we, that we could do with putting in order. And generally the larger companies are getting away with a lot more, whichever way you look at it. So yes, absolutely, they should be putting their house in order and making decisions. I think they should have been a lot more forward thinking than they have been in the past. I mean, you know, the whole world has moved into a much more digital space and it's left the BBC behind. I think, though, the BBC is essential. And I do think that I want amazing journalism in this country. And I want that. The BBC was always a bastion of that, as far as I was concerned, anyway. So I'd be disappointed. I'm very just disappointed. And I think the government and the BBC need to work together to find a way around this right now.
And do you think that will happen? Because as of now, I mean, this programme is going out in August. As of now, that fee is due.
I know. And I just, what are they going to do? Are they going to send their bailiffs round, are they? What are they going to do if people don't pay it? I feel like telling everyone not to pay it and see what happens.
I mean, there is a campaign, isn't there, to decriminalise the licence fee so that we can have a choice.
I mean, I would, a little bit of me would quite like to see what they do. You know, if we have some amazing, you know, campaigners who refuse to pay it, and let's see what happens. But I don't understand how they're going to enforce this at this time. The police are saying they can't enforce wearing masks going into shops, which they've now been told they need to. Our police force is on its knees. I feel for them. I really do, trying to manage something during a pandemic. So how this is a priority for them, I doubt it is. I'll be a bit of a watching brief for us, won't it, to see what happens. But they absolutely need to decriminalise it. I cannot understand how they're going to enforce anything with this.
I mean, there are visions of little old ladies being carted off in police vans, aren't there? Sort of.
I know.
I don't think that would happen. At least I hope it wouldn't. But no. But of course, that's the inevitability of it being a criminal act not to pay.
But yes, absolutely.
How much has this campaign affected Age UK nationally and taken your eye off the ball on your other matters?
Well, I have to say, in many ways, it hasn't. I mean, particularly on a local level, this is the first time that I've got back involved with a campaign because we've absolutely been focused on the front line. You know, our job, we delivered to 5,000 people at home during the pandemic in that 12-week period here in West Sussex and Brighton and Hove, let alone the rest of the country. So what I know is that making sure people feed themselves is absolutely crucial. So that had to be. But this actually all plays into that, doesn't it? For those on really low incomes, you know, what we know is that finding that £157.50 is £157.50 they're not heating their house with or feeding themselves with. Let's be clear, for some people, that is what this means. And when you're at home and shielding throughout this process, you are having to make those sorts of decisions, which is shocking. And one of the things I can't understand either is that, what we know is that you only get a free licence if you're receiving pension credit. But as many as 2 in 5 of pensioners on the lowest incomes do not receive the benefit, even though they are entitled to it. So it's really a shocking. So I think that we, the campaign we are going to be running now will be one which is actually, we may not have won this fight, to be quite honest with you, with the government and the BBC. We will keep banging on about it because it's essential. But what we do want people to do is to come forward and make sure that we can do them a benefit check. Even if you think you may not be entitled, let us check. There's so many people missing out. And if you get pension credit, you will then automatically not need to pay the licence. So something we can do, which is proactive and positive, is get as many people on pension credit that are that, you know, need to be, so that we can, you know, help people not pay that fee wherever we can.
I mean, a lot of people are, as you say, not claiming pension credit and lots of other benefits as well, because the system is so complicated. Are you at Age UK able to help people get round the system?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's more that the system is there, but it's just, as you rightly just pointed out, it's just complicated. And that's why we have a whole team of people here to do that. So absolutely, people should call us. We have a free phone number. And we can arrange to either do things digitally with them. We are getting back into doing an odd face-to-face appointment now. Obviously, we'd like to minimalise that for everyone. But yes, we can do that. I mean, we've got £5.2 million worth of benefits to people in West Sussex and Brighton and Hove in the last year. That's £5.2 million worth of benefits that people did not know they were entitled to. So it's a huge part of our work. It's a massively important part of our work. And we really, really want to get to as many people as possible. So for us, this is a priority. In terms of phone calls we're receiving in, is getting those benefits to people that need them. So yes, please do contact us and we will arrange it for you to make sure.
I mean, a lot of the older people that are going to be affected by this, both the pension credit issue and the licence fee, aren't tech savvy. They don't know.
No.
They haven't got a computer. Many of them haven't got a mobile phone. So what can they do?
Yeah, so just phone our free phone number from your landline. It's free phone. As I said, it's 0800 019 1310. So that's 0800 019 1310. You call us, we will either call you back, make an appointment for you, or do it on the spot over the phone with you. So, but we will make sure that you get that benefit check done and make sure you're okay. That's absolutely critical. So, you know, we have been staggered by the level of deprivation of people that have come forward during this crisis. So what we found is that half the people that have used our services during the crisis have never used our services before. So this is a generation of people who always think there's someone else more needing of a service than they do. And they just do not come forward because they think they're okay. And which is amazing. I mean, what an amazing generation, which is why it's a privilege to run this organisation. But I just think to myself, you know, after all you've done for this country, you deserve it. And let us fight for you to try and get it.
I was talking there to Helen Rice from Age UK West Sussex and Brighton and Hove, all about the loss of free television licences for the over 75. Now, we all love seeing butterflies and moths in our garden, and just now there's something special happening. It's called the Big Butterfly Count, and to find out what that is all about, our reporter Maya Davis spoke to organiser Dr. Zoe Randall.
Hello, Zoe, and welcome to At Home This Morning. It's very kind of you to agree to talk to us. Now, my only experience of this kind of citizen science is the Big Garden Bird Watch, and that's organised very, very tightly. You've got to watch for an hour over a very tight period of 3 days. Why is this organised in a very different way, any old 15 minutes in a three-week period?
It's been organised this way so that it is a quick and simple way of contributing to conservation. You know, we've all got busy lives, but many of us can easily find 15 minutes in which to take part in the Big Butterfly Count, either by visiting the website or by downloading the free smartphone app. So it's basically accessible to all. It's an awareness raising campaign, as well as generating vital data to help us keep on top of what's happening to our butterflies, which in turn reflects on how healthy our wider environment is.
Okay, and 15 minutes means you can just pop out in a sunny interval if it's a typical British summer day.
Absolutely. I mean, we're really fortunate that the weather seems to be on our side at the moment during this big butterfly count, which runs from the 17th of July until the 9th of August. And it's accessible to anybody. You don't have to go anywhere special to take part. You can just spend 15 minutes in your back garden or out on a countryside walk or in the hospital garden if you can get there and just spend 15 minutes counting the butterflies. Take some time out, pause, relax, because all of that relaxation and spending time with nature gives us a really good sense of our personal well-being and enables us to relax and unwind in an uncertain world.
Really, you're encouraging anybody and everybody to get involved, and you're making it as easy as possible.
Absolutely, because we need people to understand why butterflies and moths are so important and why nature is so important. And butterflies have been studied for over 300 years in the UK. They're beautiful, they're iconic, and most people have a natural affinity to them. They are beacons of hope. When I see my first brimstone butterfly in the spring, it's a magical experience for me. It really brightens me, lifts my mood, and it's like, hooray, we've got through the winter. The spring is here. The summer's coming. Amazing, fabulous. So, like I said, beacons of hope and symbols of transformation and rebirth.
Butterflies really do make everybody's day, and they are so important as pollinators.
They are, and also food for other creatures. So blue-tip chicks eat an estimated 35 billion caterpillars a year. And quite often you can see a butterfly flying through the garden and then it's intercepted and snapped just like that out of the sky by a bird. So a really important part of the food chain as well. And not to mention just the fact that they are beautiful in their own right.
How about people who don't really know anything much about butterflies or moths? I'm not sure I could tell a large white from a small white at a distance.
That is one thing. Small whites and large whites and even green-veined whites from a distance can be tricky. But once they settle down onto a lovely buddleia flower spike, you can tell the difference because the large white's got a lot more black on the edge of its wings. There's an ID chart that you can download from the bigbutterflycount.org website to help you with your identifications.
I noticed that the Big Garden Bird Watch asked people to indicate the habitat in which the count occurred. Do you need to know that?
Yeah, there's a box on the website when you log your sightings which asks you what, you know, your location and the habitat type.
And what about butterflies and moths not listed on the sheet? Do you want to know about those?
Well, what we'd like people to do with those is send their sightings to their local county moth recorder or their local county butterfly recorder. And information about them and the contact details can be found on the Butterfly Conservation website.
Both the ID chart and the submission forms are available only online. Aren't you excluding people who might actually be really interested and very good from taking part?
Well, it's online because Butterfly Conservation is a charity, and obviously we are resource limited. We don't have the resources for people to enter all the data if it was sent in on paper. The thing is, as well, with the lockdown, we've all got to know our neighbours a lot better and the people that live on our street and such like. So it could be that, you know, you get the whole street together and take part, and there'll be somebody on your street or neighbours that can do log the sightings for you.
Finally, I noticed that last year you counted over 1.5 million butterflies and the Painted Lady was well in the lead. What do you expect to happen this year?
Painted Lady had a phenomenal year last year. This is a one of our regular migratory species, and every 10 years or so they have bumper years. Last year was one of those bumper years. I've not actually seen a Painted Lady yet myself this year, but what we're really hoping is that species like the brimstone, which has had a good spring emergence, high numbers. We're hoping that the subsequent broods of that species will have bumper numbers this year as well, which is why we need people to take part in the count. Our weather patterns are changing dramatically, and so butterflies can help us track that. And we want to see what these weather patterns are doing to butterfly populations and distributions. By taking part in the count, you can do that. One of the other species that we're really keen to know about this year is the small tortoiseshell. That species has suffered a 79% decline since the 1970s, so it is in trouble. It's not a specialist species. It lays its eggs on stinging nettles, which are virtually everywhere. You can't go anywhere without getting stung by a stinging nettle. And so what we'd like to see, that butterfly has had a really good spring. We're hoping that subsequent generations, a second brood, will be booming and it will be a bumper one for people to spot in the big butterfly count. And if that's the case, then this butterfly bouncing back this year in the big butterfly count will be absolutely fantastic news.
I've been talking to Dr. Zoe Randall, the Senior Surveys Officer at Butterfly Conservation, which is based in Dorset. You can take part in the Big Butterfly Count by going to bigbutterflycount.org, and you can get more information by going to the Butterfly Conservation website, which is www.butterfly-conservation.org. And you can also check out our local groups in Sussex. The Sussex Butterfly Conservation Group have a website at www.sussex-butterflies.org.uk, and the Sussex Moth Group website is www.sussexmothgroup.org.uk.
Mayor Davis was talking to Dr. Zoe Randall about the big butterfly count. Now to something perhaps a little more serious. For those whose relatives are in or are thinking about going into a care home, it's a worrying time, with 3/4 of people in the UK thinking that those places are potentially unsafe. But is that a fair assumption? Well, to find out, I spoke to Bernadette Mossman from the VIDA group. And I first suggested that the whole issue of the safety of older people in care homes must be something of a hot potato for organisations such as hers.
Yes, it most certainly has been. And, there's been some very concerning media coverage over how COVID-19 has impacted in care homes. VIDA Healthcare recently commissioned out some research really to try and identify how the public were feeling in respect to placing their loved one in the care home sector. And the results that came back were somewhat concerning in respect to the fact that over 75% of the people who participated in this research didn't think it was safe to put a loved one into a care home. And for us now, it's about regaining confidence back into the sector and reassuring people that, care homes can deliver exceptional care to their loved one, and they will deliver that in a safe place.
Do you think there's a case of bad reporting or misreporting even, or as President Trump would say, fake news?
The care home sector has had a difficult time. At the early stages of the pandemic, there was no access to testing for staff or residents. So, also keeping in mind that we have probably got the most vulnerable client group at VIDA Healthcare. We are a specialist dementia care service. So the majority of our residents are in their 80s. They are have multiple health issues. They are living with dementia. They are at the highest risk. So inevitably, the impact of the pandemic would always hit hard in the care home sector. Things have improved dramatically, and we are blessed to see that the research also identified that the public have got a much better insight into social care. They recognise the part that we play to complement healthcare, and we need to now move forward with that and regain confidence, because there's people out there in desperate need of care. And we want to make sure that we are available to these people, and we can reassure them that placing their loved one with us will mean that their loved one will get the care that they need, and these people will get peace of mind.
Well, this programme At Home This Morning is specifically aimed at our older listeners and as well as those not so old. So how can you reassure them that it's safe for loved ones to go back into care homes?
From the research, there was three key areas that families expressed concerns about. One of them was about the use of PPE and managing infection in the care homes. Aviva Healthcare, we have always prided ourselves on the exceptionally high standards. Long before this pandemic hit our country, we were already using ozone technology, which kills virus and bacteria. It's like an ozone mist that covers all different, the whole environment. We also use it in our washing facilities for clothing. You know, we have always been driven to make sure that standards remain high. We've obviously enhanced those standards to make sure that we come in line with guidelines from Public Health England and our community infection control processes to make sure that we're carrying out the safest procedures. We've also ensured safe use of PPE. This has been covered across our media since the start of the pandemic. We've been blessed to say that we've always had access to PPE in our care homes. And we've also gave our staff masks to wear coming and going from work. We do something called, we refer to as 7-7 checks. So we will meet our staff when they come into the home. We check their temperature, we check their general health and well-being. We make sure they are fit and safe to go into the care home to deliver care to those their loved ones. And that is really, really important. And we constantly monitor the health and well-being of our residents. We look for something that's out of the norm for that person because, as you know, this pandemic has proven that you don't always present with symptoms. The majority of people who have this are often asymptomatic. So we need to look for something that's out of the norm for that person and not necessarily a temperature or a cough to be able to identify prompt and immediate interventions.
Now, you're obviously talking about your own company's care. How similar is it in other care homes? In fact, in all care homes, are they safe?
Well, I can't speak for the whole of the social care sector, but what I can say is that from all of the people I've spoken with across my local area, the passion and commitment that social care has shown to deliver exceptional and safe care to people during this time has been extremely moving to me. We have had a very difficult time, and every single one of the staff that I have met have stood strong through this and united with one goal in mind, and that was to make sure our residents remain safe and loved and to continue with normal life. Because for our residents living with dementia, they may not necessarily know that there's a pandemic, but they will pick up on our vibes. So training and support to our staff to be able to come in every day with a smile on their face and a sparkle in their eye. And that's something I'm so proud to say that I'm part of social care, work for social care, because that is what we do best.
Is there somewhere where people can go or on the web or talk to you on the phone?
Yes, absolutely. I would recommend if people would like to speak more about Vida Healthcare or anything in respect to the services that's delivered in social care, they can contact our website, vidahealthcare.co.uk.
Bernadette, thank you very much for joining us. And to you and all your staff, please take care and keep safe.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Now, amongst all the things that the COVID-19 pandemic has created, is, would you believe, a shortage of chocolate? Well, joining us to tell us all about it, Catherine Higgs, Head of Policy at the Co-op. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, and thank you very much for having me on today.
It's a pleasure. Tell me, can that really be true? Can COVID-19 cause a shortage of chocolate?
Well, I very much hope and doubt that we'll end up with a shortage of chocolate, but what COVID-19 is doing is impacting on farmers and growers around the world. They've all been badly impacted by the pandemic, as have we, and it's caused massive changes in the market and impacted on their incomes. So cocoa in the main is grown by smallholder farmers and growers, despite growing some of the world's most important crops like cocoa and tea and coffee and lots of other things, are some of the most vulnerable and least prepared for the disease. They're now at increased risk of hunger and poverty due to the pandemic, really. So it's very scary for them.
And what are the co-op doing to help with this?
You know, people are absolutely core to who we are and what we do, whether that's focusing in on the community in the UK or looking at communities along our extended supply chain. And our core commitment is that everybody that produces co-op food will get a fair deal. So to help and to reflect the challenges that have arisen because of the pandemic, we pulled together a charter which brings together our commitments around fair trade, supporting projects across the globe to make sure that communities that are impacted are supported. One of the ones that I'll share with you is a project in Peru, a country where we get cocoa that goes into some of our irresistible chocolate bars. Peru is a country that's been really badly impacted by the pandemic. And what the project will do will provide food parcels for communities. It will provide medical equipment and PPE. And really importantly, it will provide safe accommodation for workers so that if they are unfortunate enough to get the disease, they can be looked after, but away from their families so the disease doesn't spread. So lots of different things around fair trade. We're also doing some work with the One Foundation, who have been long-term partners of the co-op. We've worked with them over 10 years. And for every bottle of co-op water that's sold, a donation is made to the One Foundation. And that donation goes to supporting hygiene and sanitation projects, mainly in sub-Saharan Africa, to help communities access clean, safe water, which, as you can imagine, is absolutely critical at this moment in time. You know, the key health advice coming out from everybody is to wash your hands. Just imagine what it'd be like if you couldn't wash your hands. So that's a real priority for us. But, you know, we've got lots of suppliers. We're also working on providing education and training, and that's been really well received because suppliers, you know, are having to adapt quickly on their, you know, it's difficult to work out how to operate in a factory, for example, and still maintain social distancing and keep everybody safe. So those are lots of different things that we're doing that are all coming together as part of this wellbeing charter.
And there's lots of other specialist shops, specialist chocolate shops, of course. Why do you think the co-op has taken a lead on this?
Cocoa is such an important crop. We've been involved in fair trade for a long time and we've got really close relationships with our cocoa growers. You know, we actually know the cooperatives that produce that cocoa. So for us, it's a moral question. I can't speak for other chocolate companies, and I'm sure they're doing what they can. But I think, you know, if they're not, they really need to look down their supply chain and make sure the people who, you know, their livelihoods quite frankly depend on are treated fairly.
And do you think there will be, some might say, inevitable increase in prices?
I think markets are very, are very good at kind of balancing out sort of these fluctuations. And I'd hope that we wouldn't see, any real significant changes. But I hope what will happen is that the money will start to now flow back down to the farmers as they're able to get their crops to market and things start to move again as transport restrictions, people restrictions, etc., all relaxed a little bit and things start to go back to normal.
But you don't think there's a danger that will be a shortage of chocolate, that go-to first choice for anybody that's suffering from stress or just wants to pick you up? You think suppliers are safe?
I think suppliers are safe. There's a lot of, you know, chocolate in the stores at the moment, and the way the market and manufacturing works is there's lots of chocolate to kind of and cocoa to keep us going in the interim. And, you know, everybody is working so hard to make sure what you've described doesn't happen. So I think you're safe. I think our chocolate is safe.
Is there somewhere where people can go and get more information if they want to help?
If people want to find out more, then go on the co-op website, so co-op.co.uk, or go on our social channels. There's loads of information on there around fair trade, around how to get closer and get involved with fair trade. I know, you know, lots of citizens of Brighton are really, really good fair trade supporters, and they'll probably know more than I will about this. But on the website as well, you'll also find out about our ethical trade programme and about the work that we do with the One Foundation to combat water poverty. So loads of information all there for you. And just get in contact if you want to know more.
Catherine, that's wonderful. Thank you very much for joining us.
Brilliant. Thank you, Chris.
That was Catherine Higgs from the Co-op, who was preparing us for a potential shortage of chocolate. And surely there are just no words to describe such an event. And that just about brings us to the end of this edition of At Home This Morning. So until we next meet over the airwaves in about 4 weeks' time, it's goodbye from me. However, don't forget that our executive producer, technical operator bar none, and my co-presenter Richard Davis will be here with his next show in just 2 weeks. For the past hour, you've been listening to At Home This Morning, which is a Grey Matters production for Radio Reverb. But just before I do go, may I remind you that you can listen again to a selection of some of the recent editions of At Home This Morning by simply visiting our website and just entering Grey Matters Productions, CIC, into your internet browser. And so, until we meet next time over the airwaves in about 4 weeks or so, this is Chris English signing off as usual with Please Keep Safe. Bye for now.